My name is Shredda, and this is The Lightner Side of Things, Practitioner Perspectives in School Psychology, a place for school psychology practitioners to come together and share experiences and insights about their work. Today, I'm talking with Emily Klein, a practitioner and someone who holds lots of different leadership positions and has held lots of different leadership positions in the state and national association. And I wanted to talk to you, Emily, about holding those types of positions while also being a building level practitioner and kind of the nuances of that and how one informs the other. I think there's lots of school psychologists who practice in a building and love working in that way, but also may have aspirations of working in a position that gives them a little more more tools to influence change in a bigger way or a different kind of way. But I think a lot of school psychs may be hesitant to kind of approach those roles and take on those roles for different reasons. So I thought this might be interesting to talk about. So first, tell us who you are and some of the roles that you do hold.
Sure. Hi, my name is Emily Klein. I'm a school psychologist. Some of the leadership roles that I hold, I am currently the GPR chair for the Delaware Association of School Psychologists. I am the current committee chair of the NASP Assistance to States Committee, which is a committee that helps provide training to state association leaders about how to basically run a state school psychology association, because that's not really a skill set that they teach you in grad school. I've been the president of the state association. I started out as the webmaster. I was the program chair. So I've held a variety of leadership positions. Oh, and I was an NASP delegate too. I've held a lot of different leadership positions in school psychology.
Yeah, so you've done it all almost, and you're still doing it all. You're continuing to do so much. And that's interesting that you have kind of rotated through these different roles. And I see that a lot in different state associations or even the National Association of different organizations, where you do see kind of the same people filling some of those roles or kind of working in the same capacity and using different roles in the organization. How far were you into your career when you decided to start pursuing some of these leadership roles?
Well, I think decided is kind of a strong word. I actually was an intern. During my internship, my internship supervisor at the time was the NASP delegate for Delaware and encouraged me to get involved in the state association. So he'd been trying to get me to come to a board meeting, a DASP board meeting, for quite some time. And I was like, oh yeah, sure, I'll come, you know, whatever. So I came to a meeting and it's just sitting there in the room. I kind of felt like, you know, why am I here? This is really strange. And then they started talking about like that they need to work on their web presence and all this kind of stuff. So you can tell like how long ago this was. And so they started talking about their web presence and about how they had this outside person that was doing their website, and they were so frustrated with them that it just took so long to get stuff up. And I was like, you realize there's tools out there that you can just, you know, put the website up and manage it yourself. I don't know why I spoke up. This is what happens to me. And then they turned to me like, really? I'm like, yeah, it's really easy. If you can edit a Microsoft Word document, then you can run a website. I'm like, okay, well, can you do that? Sure. So that's how I became the webmaster because I was the person that knew a little bit about technology. And then from there, I just stayed involved. Like you said, once you're involved, a lot of people kind of tend to rotate around different positions. I think that's kind of an interesting phenomenon. simply because I feel like in some ways it contributes to it, the feelings from folks that leadership positions are kind of closed off, that it's kind of cliquish and that kind of stuff. But I think what really ends up happening is that once you get involved, you see the value in it and all the neat things that you get to do and the people that you get to meet and to get to talk to other practitioners across the state that may not be in your own district, and learning kind of how different districts learn things. It gives you a broader perspective of your job. And then getting involved at other levels, then you might get to talk to other school psychologists across the United States or even internationally. And then hearing about how things are there, that's, I think, what has kept me involved with leadership has been those experiences that I've had where I could talk to other school psychologists doing school psychology in other places and finding out kind of what it's like there. I've learned so, so much about the profession just from getting to talk to all these different people.
Do you think, well, it sounds like being in those positions has contributed to your own growth as mm-hmm. a school psychologist. And there's so much value in that you've obviously gotten. How do you think it's contributed to your growth as a practitioner? Or has it at all? Has it influenced the way you practice in the building, how you talk to students, families, and work with your school team?
Oh, I think it's contributed a lot. just learning again how other people do things. One, it gives me a little bit, it allows me to be able to step back sometimes in situations in a building, like when you kind of get mired in like little weird details and quirks and how your place runs. Having that broader perspective of how other people do things or how they've approached certain types of issues, or even the types of issues that others have experienced elsewhere that you haven't had, but then something happens and you can say, oh, like I can see how that problem could happen if, you know, in a few more steps from where we are. So, like for example, some states really have a big issue with outside clinicians, specifically marriage and family therapists, coming into schools and kind of basically taking away the counseling role from school psychologists. And I can see, you know, that we might have some like early steps toward that by having like contractors come in and that kind of stuff. So it starts as something that's very well-meaning and then it kind of ends up going off the rails. so it's being able to have that broader perspective of what's going on. I think it helps me as a practitioner not get mired in those little details and the minutia that can just drive you absolutely crazy. So being able to step back is helpful. I've also learned quite a bit from leadership positions, just in terms of like when I was a NASP delegate, one of the roles of the NASP delegate was that we read the position papers. So, you know, the white papers on the NASP website, you go through there, all the position papers and stuff, those are all approved by the leadership assembly of which the delegates are part. And so when you are a person that has to read those and vote on whether or not to approve them, you learn a lot about a lot of different topics that might not have necessarily been your interest, because it's whatever topic comes up during your term. I think that they rotate on a seven-year term or a seven-year rotation, that every 7 years they're reviewed. So I got to learn a lot of different topics just from reading those papers. I mean, it's not like anyone was preventing me from learning anything about it, but it was just something maybe that I hadn't really thought about so much in my practice, or just, you know, hadn't gotten far enough to think about on my own. And then reading an article about it written by people who really, really know their stuff has really helped give me a lot of skills that I can use as a practitioner.
And I think you're right that we we feel like we're in a fishbowl a lot of the time, mm-hmm. where we're only kind of seeing our building teams every day, mm-hmm. working with that, in doing so, we do get kind of caught up in the day-to-day of our own lives, our own stories in our buildings. So that's interesting. It does give you, it's nice that it gives you that wider perspective. And in doing so, it sounds like it kind of calms you in a way, gives you, helps you have a little bit less anxiety about whatever the day-to-day issues are that are happening.
Yeah, don't get me wrong, I still have anxiety. But I do feel like it gives you that extra bit of perspective that, like, you know, to kind of take that breath and, like, you know, as yucky as things could be in the situation right now, I've heard it being a lot worse for other people. And so sometimes that knowledge, that kind of that, like, reality shock of that the situation is not as bad as it could be, that it's really helpful as a practitioner.
I'm sure. It's always nice to, like, take a step back and see that wider picture.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think as a practitioner, what do you as a practitioner kind of bring to those roles? You know, you talked about being able to connect with other psychologists on a national level and learning from them and hearing their stories. What do you think you bring to that table, or as a practitioner, your experiences lend to that?
What I bring, I think, especially at the national level, I feel like there are a lot of people that are involved at that level that are graduate educators primarily. And I also have dabbled in that. I do some adjunct work, that's not my full-time gig. But I think that when you are around a lot of people that their expertise is more graduate education, they're not as in touch with what's actually going on, you know, in the everyday on the ground kind of stuff. And so I think that that practitioner perspective of that lived experience, and this is what it's like on the ground, and trying to implement, you know, things that people have created who are not, like, in, you know, in charge of implementing them all day, that it definitely, I think it gives that additional perspective to those discussions that we've had. Because one of the things that the NASP delegate does as part of the NASP Leadership Assembly, so I should probably back up and talk about that a little bit. The Leadership Assembly is the decision-making body. In terms of, they make the decisions for the direction of the profession. So the board of directors is a smaller group. They make, you know, the financial, fiscal decisions, that kind of stuff. But the leadership assembly is really meant to direct the work of the profession and kind of where the profession is going and that kind of stuff. And so as a practitioner being part of that body, I think that it's really powerful to be involved in making those decisions about the profession moving forward. One of the big discussions that we've had, although I'm not a delegate anymore, as a committee chair, I'm still part of that leadership assembly, has been on the update of the NASP practice model and the standards and all that kind of stuff. We were up for our 10-year review on that this year. And so the last 3 years, we've been working on, you know, what is our profession going to look like in the next 10 years? What are the things that we need to anticipate? Are there going to be big changes in how certain things go? How do we help support our graduate programs? How do we support our practitioners? How do we promote ethical practice in trying to anticipate some of the ethical dilemmas that are going to come up in the next 10 years? So I think that practitioner perspective for the standards revisions is critical. Because again, as practitioners, we're the ones working directly with the students. And so many of these things are on how our work impacts kids. And if you don't have people that are on the ground, that are a part of that process, I think you're missing a really critical voice in that discussion.
I definitely agree with you there, that practitioner perspective is key and really valuable in those discussions.
Yeah, and I think what happens in a lot of these like big advisory group types of things that I've been a part of, you know, different task forces for different things, for not just school psychology associations, but also DSEA, NEA, you know, those kinds of things as well. And there tends to be an awful lot of problem admiring, is my favorite Kathy Minky term.
I like that. Problem admiring.
Yep, admiring the problem. So we spend a whole lot of time talking about what's wrong. And then there's just not a whole lot of impetus sometimes in these groups to kind of, okay, well, what's the next step? Like, how can we fix it? And I think the practitioners, when you have practitioners that are involved in those groups, that does tend to be more of a voice pushing those groups forward, because we, the people on the ground, we want to see the change. We want to be part of the change. We don't want things to continue to stay the way that they are. Because the way that they are is clearly not working for some of our kids, some of our professionals, you know, depending on what the task force is around. And so I think that that's another place where that practitioner voice is really valuable, is just in really trying to push and emphasize that we need change. Like, this can't just be, you know, people in a room, you know, patting each other on the back and saying that, oh, we're doing good work and we're just, you know, kind of talking and having fun and that kind of stuff. That the obligation that we have to our students, to the profession of school psychology, to the profession of education, to the mental health of our students, that the obligation that we have is that we need to move this work forward. And we want to be part of that. We want to do all these things that, you know, we hear about in grad school that are really good things that we should all be doing. And then you get out and realize that nobody's doing them.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I've never thought about it that way before. Everyone, you know, everyone cares. Everyone is motivated to make change. That's why we're all in this field. Mm-hmm. But being a practitioner at that building level and feeling what's happening on a day-to-day basis, feeling whatever rules, policies are in place, you have a different level of motivation almost.
Exactly, because we want to see the change. And it's not enough just to talk about the change at a high level. We want to see that change trickle through all levels of the system so that the people on the ground see the difference and are doing things differently, or, you know, that there's some sort of measurable difference. And I think, I really do think that that's one of the biggest issues with some of those like kind of big overarching groups, whether it be an association, whether it be a task force, whether, you know, that high level committee work, is that you see in those groups, you see people that are passionate, people that are intelligent, that have really great ideas. And then as a practitioner on the other side of it, then you see that these wonderful things that people are talking about aren't actually trickling down. And so you can see that there's been a communication breakdown somewhere. And so trying to keep that that awareness for those groups, that they might think that they know how things are going, but that it's not being communicated, or that something's breaking down somewhere. I feel like that's really, really important for that type of work to be effective, is that if you don't have the ability to kind of take the temperature of what's going on the ground, you don't really know if all the conversations and the work that you're doing at that higher level is actually making any sort of difference.
And I think that alone is reason enough for practitioners to be involved in leadership positions.
Definitely.
Go for it, and really at all different levels, the district, state, national level, to
definitely
really get in those positions and have a voice there.
Mm-hmm. Because even if it's something, it's just even at your building level. I mean, getting on a building level leadership team, you can make measurable changes in your day-to-day work. Getting on a district leadership team, you can make measurable changes in your day-to-day work. I mean, at all levels, you have that opportunity. And so it's really just a matter of seizing those opportunities as they come along.
Absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree. So, and speaking of those opportunities, I feel like a lot of psychologists are hesitant to get involved because of the extra time and energy that it does take. You are essentially taking on almost another job. I think it probably feels like to you, I'm going to guess.
Sometimes.
So how do you manage that? How do you juggle both of those things and manage to kind of do both?
Well, I will admit sometimes I don't do it well. But I think that for me, I kind of stumbled into leadership. It definitely wasn't a deliberate decision for me, at least not initially. I never really saw myself as a leader. I was always pretty quiet and shy, and I still am for the most part. I'm an introvert that can play the part of an extrovert occasionally. But it's not really something I ever
Every school psychologist saw. Is a leader.
Say that. Right. It is. A school psychologist is a leader. And I think that's one of the things I realized in grad school, as I learned more about the profession, is that we really have to be advocates for our students, and we have to stand up. And being involved in different levels of leadership, whether it be at the district level, building level, state level, national level, all of these different experiences have given me just incredible leadership training. So even if I wanted to step back at some point and just like focus more on my building, that I am much better equipped now to do that than if I had not taken advantage of those experiences. And I know that time is a factor. Time is definitely a factor. But just because you pursue a leadership position doesn't necessarily mean it has to completely take over your life. You can pursue leadership in small ways. Like maybe you aren't a chair of a committee, but maybe you participate on committee. And so you do a little bit of work, but not something that's completely overwhelming. Or there's like a busy time of year when you really get involved and spend a lot of time on something, but the rest of the time, it's, the workload is pretty minimal. So it's a matter of identifying those experiences and trying to kind of to gauge that, but a lot of it's just being willing to say yes and to try it out and to see how it goes. And if it's not a good fit, then to move on. Because I think that if you spend too much time thinking about like, oh, can I really manage the additional time? If you spend a lot of time thinking about it, you're going to talk yourself out of it. But I think that if you just kind of jump in and just kind of take on what you can and, stopping yourself if you feel like it's getting to be too much, or just finding kind of like that optimal level of involvement, I feel like that's doable for pretty much anybody. There's always work to be done. And even if it's just a small, short-term project. Like, for example, when Delaware released the proposed regulations just recently, our committee jumped into action, and we had some people that weren't really even had expressed interest on being on the committee, but they were willing to come in and help just review regulations and have those discussions. So you're probably talking maybe 10, 12 hour commitment over the span of a few weeks. And then that's their extent of involvement. And although they're welcome to be involved beyond that if they want to be, but just kind of trying that out. So it doesn't have to be that you're signing on to something for an eternity. You're not going to be a leader in perpetuity in a single role kind of thing. Just being willing to say yes when that opportunity comes by and seeing how it goes, I think is probably the best thing I can, best way I can say to kind of not get hung up about the time involvement piece.
Yeah, so just kind of leaning in.
Exactly.
And like you said, be willing to say yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then also along the way, being in tune with yourself. And mm-hmm. if you need to pull back, that's always an option.
Exactly.
I think that's important to remember. That doesn't have to be permanent. It doesn't mm-hmm. have to be your life, that you always have options.
Right. That it's, you know, your life has natural ebbs and flows. And there are certain times when you're going to be more able to do some of those types of experiences than in others, and recognizing, you know, you have to be really in tune with yourself and realistic about what you can do. So if you can give the time, give the time. And if you need the time for yourself and for your family, then saying, hey, I need the time for myself and my family, and I can't participate at the same level that I was before. Like, all these things are okay. And you have to give yourself permission for that. So I don't know that that's necessarily something school psychologists are so good at sometimes.
No. I think school psychologists are very good at just jumping in, mm-hmm. taking on a lot, mm-hmm. but then not pulling back.
Mm-hmm.
And not always doing the best with self-care.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it speaks to the dedication of school psychologists
our
willpower and wanting to make change.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think we're starting to realize more and more that we can't make effective change until we're also taking care of ourselves and being a model of self-care for others as well.
Exactly.
So what advice, that may have been, I mean, that was good advice in itself, so that may have been it. What advice would you give to school psychologists, especially early career school psychologists, who may want to pursue some kind of leadership position, whether it be in the building or district or state or national associations?
It's honestly the same kind of advice that they give you if you do improv. Say yes. When an opportunity comes by, say yes.
Say yes.
So, you know, if it's something in your building level where they need somebody to lead something and you think that it's, you know, something that you're interested in or you think that you'd like to try, say yes. If it's an opportunity to be involved with a committee, like, for example, when we put out that all call to membership about interest in reviewing the regulations and that kind of stuff, people said yes and they participated and it was wonderful. We had some amazing discussions because of people that had joined the discussion that had a unique perspective that we didn't already have involved in some way, shape, or form. So just be open to saying yes when those opportunities come by, because once you say yes once, then you'll have more opportunities to say yes in the future if that's something that you're really interested in continuing in. But if you say no, then no one's going to come looking for you.
And it also makes me think about, you know, some of the barriers that people think might be there once they get to the table after they say yes. But it's a very good point that, you know, all of that doesn't matter if you're not at the table in the first place.
Exactly. An aphorism that they have at NASP is, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu.
I like it.
Yeah. So the more that you can do to get yourself at the table, and it's not even necessarily so much about you personally maybe being at the table, but who mm-hmm. you represent. So getting school psychologists at the table is really important. So again, when Delaware did their reg revision updates, they had school psychologists involved in quite a few of the disability specific subgroups. So that got our voice at the table. One of the things that I've personally been involved in is with the union DSEA, because there were a lot of things going out that were more specific to teachers. But in Delaware, we're all members of the union. So we also, as school psychologists and support staff, need to be represented. And so trying to make sure that that perspective is reflected in that. And just in the last few years, I've seen a huge difference in the discussions that are happening. Got a school psychologist that's been involved on a committee that's drafting the SEL regs for Delaware. Mm-hmm. So just trying to remind people that we're there so they can invite us. Is it doesn't necessarily always have to be you that's the person at the table, but just making sure that people remember that they have to include us as school psychologists, as our perspective in how we, in the ways that we work with students and the types of things that we support, I think is really, really critical. We have a lot of training in database decision making that is really important to bring to the table in those kinds of discussions, and just the things that we see with our students are different than maybe what other folks might see. And so making sure that those perspectives are accounted for is super important. So that's why it's really important that we got to get ourselves at the table.
Couldn't have said it better. So you are GPR chair of the Delaware Association of School Psychologists, mm-hmm. and I feel like I'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the fact that we're in the middle of the COVID crisis right now, mm-hmm. which is exacerbating a lot of the inequities that we see as school psychologists during normal times, mm-hmm. on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And so as GPR chair, is there any advice you can give or anything you can recommend that practitioners can or should do to kind of get involved and make any change or difference at that policy level?
So there's a variety of ways that you can do some kind of grassroots advocacy work. If there's opportunities for you to provide feedback on how things are going. So I know some districts, they might be sending out surveys about how things are going, or what are your opinions about reopening, that kind of stuff. Respond to those, participate in those. You can always contact your local legislator. So there, your local Delaware Senate and representative people. So they are always willing to listen. You can contact people at the city level. I know that there is a governor's committee. I was just talking with somebody from DSEA about this earlier this week. There's a committee that is starting to work on this whole issue of equity. It's a governor's advisory committee. There's a lot of higher level people that are currently involved. So they don't really have a good practitioner perspective just yet. But if you hear about those kinds of opportunities, bending the ear of people that are involved and reminding them, hey, we're still there. So even again, if we're not at the table at the moment, then we can still get our opinions in there. And so when they start to do some of the smaller breakout work, like they might focus on a particular issue like broadband internet access, then maybe we can be part of that. So giving all those opportunities, or taking all those opportunities rather, to give input is super duper important.
Is there anything upcoming for DASP that you want to plug?
Well, we did have to cancel our convention, which we're super bummed about.
Yeah. But I did see you guys are doing coffee hours.
Yes, we are doing coffee hours. I'm not 100% sure when the next one will be. I am looking at trying to make the topic of one of these coffee hours related to the issue of equity, because I want to. We had our first coffee hour. Was it last week? And it was basically just kind of a discussion about what's going on, what are you seeing? It was a really good opportunity to just kind of hear about some of the stuff that people are experiencing and what are some of the concerns. But if given the opportunity, or I'm gonna just take it. if I had the opportunity, I would really like to host a coffee hour around the issue of equity, to find out like what are some of the issues that people are running into. Because we had pretty good representation from all across the state at our last one, and I would really be interested to hear about what are some of the issues that are specific to the areas that people are working in across the state. Some of the issues that I know about, like the internet access piece, language barrier. So a lot of things being given in English, and there's not really a whole lot of support for our families whose parents may not be able to read in English. That's a big barrier. So I would really love to have a coffee hour discussion around what people, what school psychologists across the state are seeing in terms of how equity is causing, or the lack of equity, I guess, is causing issues for some of their more marginalized student populations. And from there, trying to think about like what is a way that DAS specifically can move the needle. What can we do to help? So
I think a coffee hour like that would be very attractive to a lot of school psychologists.
I hope so. I would really love to see it, because I want to find out what's going on across the state.
Well, Emily, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to The Leitner Side of Things. If you have any feedback or topic ideas, let me know on Twitter. My Twitter handle is @SGERA99. See you at the next episode.